that the UFOs did not come from extraterrestrial space didn't need any more convincing. And the people who did the clamoring for investigations were going to be furious if Dr. Condon didn't produce a real live extraterrestrial being. And this, well, I didn't say that anywhere in print, but I thought it and mentioned to some friends. And this has turned out to be a case, a very damaging article, or I would say scurrilous article. It was written by the same John Fuller I mentioned before in the 14 May 1968 issue of Look magazine. It's titled The UFO Fiasco. So all that has happened is that the people who are dissatisfied with the Air Force conduct are now more furious than ever on this matter. So there's $500,000 that could have been used to reduce the national debt. The Canadians are a little bit better off in this respect. They had made studies of UFOs under the direction of the Department of National Defense, but as of 24 January of this year, it was announced they would no longer make studies because UFOs are not a threat to Canadian security. Instead, such sightings are being handled by the National Research Council at Ottawa. And there I understand they're not chasing after the UFOs. Reports are filed. Those which appear to be of meteors and have some scientific interest will be followed out. I wish that our own Air Force were allowed to do the same. I am sure that it would try to stop its UFO investigations, but it is not permitted to do so. One last little point before I show you some of the slides is photographs. Well, we have a lot of photographs. Some of them are fakes. Some of them show globs of light. And some of them are real. But there's nothing yet, no single photograph has ever been produced which shows an occupant. Well, there's something which I've seen, a little sketch from quite a distance, but nothing real close up. And by the way, the amateurs who follow UFOs differ themselves. There are perhaps 20 groups, 100 groups, and they are just argue among themselves, and worse than against the Air Force. For example, there is a famous case of a New England couple who say, under hypnosis, they were treated by psychiatrists, and under hypnosis, they said they were abducted by a UFO and subjected to a medical exam. And they spoke in English to the people within the UFO. Well, the people were sincere enough, but here's a case under hypnosis. It isn't the kind of evidence which we as scientists treat or consider as useful. Nevertheless, one faction says, yes, this proves that the UFO were here with occupants, and the other says no. Another one is a well-known case in the United States. You may not have heard of it. It relates to Snippy the horse. He was found dead and partially devoured in Colorado, right near University of Colorado. And one immediately an outcry came up that a UFO had landed and made off with some horse meat. And again, in one of the magazines which I read all this junk, called Fate. There are two articles, one by one faction of the UFOs who say, yes, Snippy was attacked by a UFO, and the other says it's all nonsense, just a hoax. It's quite interesting to read the two points of view. It's well worth the 40 cents I spent. Now, the University of the Air Force did not investigate the case because it investigates only cases, U.S. Air Force, which it receives. University of Colorado, however, being close by and counting having $500,000, sent out a team. The team consisted of a veterinarian, a physicist, and a psychologist. The horse being dead, it isn't clear to me what the psychologist was going to do. The report solemnly declared there was no evidence of UFO activity. And I get this information from one of the fact sheets put out by the U.S. Air Force. They will publish this stuff. Well, there's a possibility that there will be investigations after Condon is through, and there will be demands as furious as ever that there should be congressional investigations. I myself doubt whether these will take place. Congressmen, at least in recent years, are pretty savvy on scientific matters. They have to be because of the space program, nuclear energy programs, and they realize the type of problem. But if, contrary to my advice, they do hold an investigation, we'll really have the finest entertainment which has ever been put on videotape. Not only will you have all factions of the UFO amateurs, but also you'll have the sideshows of interviews on the side which when the people don't go into the congressional rooms. And those things are really going to be hilarious. So I don't know whether I should advise Congress not to hold investigations and deprive everyone of a little bit of honest fun or to save the money. I myself think it would be a disgrace if they held such investigations. May I have the slides, please? Can I turn off the lights here? It doesn't make any difference. Oh, let's see. I have the slides myself, and where is my little jigger? Could we have the lights for one moment, please? All right. Could we have that mic control? Right here. Fine. Thank you. I think I'll switch it around here. This way we'll be okay. Okay? Here's the star chart. Here is the star chart for anyone who would like to do navigation. Now, let me see if I can focus properly. Yeah. Works fine. These are eclipsing binaries, 33 of them, which have very sharp minima. So if you're out in a spaceship and you traveled away from the sun 186,000 miles, the time of eclipse would change by 1 second. So therefore, if you time these by, even with the nearest minute, nearest half hour, you would find how far you had traveled away from the sun. One of the difficulties in extraterrestrial travel, or if such visitors do come to us, is that they've been shot at. And this may make them a little bit nervous, which is the explanation given as to why they don't land. Last year, Canada celebrated its centennial, and there was an exposition in Montreal, which something like 15 or 50 million visitors attended, I forget which. Also in the province of Alberta, there were celebrations, and one city which outdid itself was St. Paul. It's about 200 miles northeast of here, and it had, I think, most projects of any city, I'm told, except for Montreal. And one of the projects was a landing pad for UFOs. And this is it. It was dedicated on June 3rd of 1967 by the then Minister of National Defense, Mr. Paul Hellyer. The object was by putting up, the theory was by putting up something that was safe of this sort, that the object could come in and would be safe. Incidentally, in 1954, a proposal was made that a safe field be set up near Medicine Hat. Nothing came of it, but this one came. According to the newspaper accounts, which I got from the Calgary Herald, due to the courtesy of Mr. Sanborn, this can also be used as a dance platform when no one's landing. I inquired into the thing a bit. By the way, there's a UFO, fake. There's a helicopter, genuine. I inquired into things, and I have now come to the conclusion that it was set up by some contractors, concrete. They wanted to emphasize concrete. And so they wanted to put something up that would attract attention. It did. Right now, the mayor won't write to me, and the Chamber of Commerce won't write to me. So it was put up as a little bit of a wild idea and gained so much prominence, it snowballed a little bit, much more than the people involved first thought. I regret, there are two things I'd like to see in Canada, the tides in the Bay of Fundy and this UFO landing pad. Here is something to illustrate what I was talking about before. A famous case, one of the very good cases of strange objects, was 24 July 1948 near in Alabama, where two pilots in a DC-3 saw a very strange object flash by. And this is called the Child's Witted case. It is one of the famous classics. Well, I was able, by a little bit of investigation and so forth, going on to it, getting a hold of this, which was published the next day in the one of the Atlanta newspapers. This is from a photostat, slide was made. One of them reported, one of the pilots, this is what Whited saw, was this kind of device with two rows of portholes. The other, the co-pilot, didn't see portholes. He saw some cigar bands around here and saw this object in the back and a sort of a snout in front. In addition, there was only one other person that saw it, Mr. McCavey from Columbus, Ohio, who said all he saw was a light flash by. He didn't see any portholes or anything of this nature. Now, of the three, who's telling the truth? The answer is all three. They're all recording as best as they can what they saw. So I'm certain that something went by, but that it was a spaceship with portholes, that's something else again, because here we have a contradiction. Incidentally, it was reported that the object suddenly zoomed up. Now, this is impossible from the principles of dynamics. The thrust is to the rear. If this swiveled in some way, it would start spinning. The Exeter sightings that I mentioned consisted of glowing masses which moves very slowly along high-tension cables. There were a large number of cases reported. Sizes estimated from a few feet, 2 or 3 feet, up to 80 feet. Well, they were small objects, or rather, they had no portholes, no jets. Now, and the people who claim that there are extraterrestrial visitors claim both of those, but they're so different they can't be. This is a photograph taken by an amateur astronomer named James Lucy. He was 17 years old, and it's remarkable that he didn't ask for money when these papers, public photographs were revealed. It shows something here, and here a few seconds later. This is the moon, by the way, very hazy. Well, you can see this is an amorphous object, no shape, no size, and quite unlike any kind of an object we'd expect a spaceship to be. Furthermore, it changes appearance very rapidly in a few seconds. Now, I admit that something was there, something was seen. This is a UFO. That it is an extraterrestrial spaceship, I cannot accept. Here's another object which came from New Zealand, from Venezuela. And it was published in a book called Flying Saucer Occupants. And their photograph, the book called Flying Saucer Occupants, contains not one single picture of an occupant. This is on the cover picture. Here are high tension lines, and you can perhaps faintly see an elliptical object. And this is supposed to be evidence of extraterrestrial activity. Obviously, it's some kind of a coronal discharge. It's transparent. Incidentally, this book on the flyleaf says the following, after going through all the cases of extraterrestrial occupants. It says on the flyleaf, "You may not believe all the stories in this book, but just think of the consequences if even one of them were true." I've never come across a more plaintive plea. Now I was talking about the discovery of Mars. I've had a little bit of a feeling of being involved. I wasn't born in 1877, by the way. In this way, this is the 26-inch refractor of the U.S. Naval Observatory. I think this photograph was taken around 1905. I know it's a very old photograph. I worked with the 26-inch, observing double stars from 1949 to 1953. And this is a mounting. The lens is the same that Asaph Hall used, but the mounting is by Warner and Swayze. That's a very old picture. I made some modifications. And this is a more recent one, which shows the telescope painted up a little bit. There are a good many automatic controls in the device now. But let's go back in history a little bit. Here is the 26-inch. Let's see if I can focus this better. There we are. Still not. The 26-inch piece with the old mounting in the old Naval Observatory. This was built in 1873. The twin, by the way, is at the McCormick Observatory in Charlottesville, Virginia. So this is a telescope that Asaph Hall used to discover the satellite of Mars. Well, I worked with the telescope observing very close binaries. The lens was very fine condition when I worked with it. I could resolve stars when the seeing was good down to 2/100ths of a second of arc, which is the theoretical limit. So I knew it was a good telescope. But I looked several times at Mars when I had a chance, when the seeing was good, and I never saw the satellites because they're very difficult objects and I couldn't spend time just observing them. I just took a few minutes occasionally when Mars was visible. Now I'd like to show you something of interest. This is the journal of Asaph Hall from 1877, August 11. There's H, which means Hall. And when I was working with the telescope, we went through it one time, transferring some books. And so, of interest, I went back to the Observatory Journal for the date that Hall made the discovery to see what he had to say. And here, you can't read this perhaps, but it says, this proves to be the satellite of Mars. See August 16th. You see, he measured the position angle and the distance, which is down here about 71 seconds or something like that, on several days, March 11th and so on. Then it was cloudy on March 16th. Then, by noticing that it had moved, he was able to know that it was the satellite. So on August 11th, he could not write it was a satellite. What it says here is a faint star near Mars. But on a few days later, he was able to identify it. And it says, seeing good for Mars. Oh, I can't read this. Yes, this was on Mars on the spots. Now remember, there are two satellites of Mars. So here's the other one. And now he says, Mars star. And says, both the above objects found distinctly seen, both by Anderson, that must be another observer, and myself. Well, I thought this might be of some interest to you. This, ladies and gentlemen, finishes my discussions. Mesdames, Messieurs, même que j'ai parlé en anglais, je vous assure qu'il n'existe pas de visiteurs extraterrestres, ni en anglais, ni en français.
Dr. Markowitz has kindly consented to answer one or two questions. He has indicated that he reserves the right to answer or not to answer, as the case may be. No questions on politics or religion.
Comment is that I'm familiar with that argument. If you will read the literature of the believers, they answer it in some way or other with gobbledygook, which is no different from their other. And I have considered that it isn't worthwhile for me to mention that point. I stick to the very basic essentials, because if you cannot get liftoff and descent, unless you invoke magic, you can just as well invoke it for every other phenomenon. I'm not sure that I don't get your question. Who is they? I'm glad you asked that question. It gives me a chance for another 10-minute talk. The phenomenon has been completely answered by the Air Force. And if you accept that, you might as well stop all investigations. If you don't accept the Air Force explanation, then there are demands that it be continued. And those have been so strong in our country that the investigations are made. They're made by people such as University of Colorado, or made in University of Toronto Institute of Aerospace Studies, because they think they'll find something. But the fact is this: the phenomenon of UFOs will never be laid to rest. There will always be people who see things, always be people who interpret them as extraterrestrial activity. Don't know if I've answered your question, but thank you for the chance. Okay, fine.
Thank you.
answer is this. I can't be all-powerful in knowing what will occur, but the kind of laws we're talking about here are a very simple one, like action and reaction. You can't lift yourself by his bootstraps. You're not going to have any action. That, I think, will never change. That you can have energy greater than equals mc squared, I don't believe. But I won't argue the point. Now, the point I do make, though, is when it comes to spending money on investigations, we have to be guided somewhat by our knowledge, just like perpetual motion. Maybe somebody can discover a principle, but so far it doesn't look like a paying game. And if there is any possibility, there should be some evidence. We've had 20 years of chasing, and there hasn't been the slightest. Did I ever mention why this is a paradox? Well, it's a paradox that scientists will go contrary to the principles of scientists.